wake up, awaken.
Welcome to You Wake Up with Reverend Crystal Muldrow of the Unity Community for Spiritual Unfoldment, a web ministry at www.youwakeup.com. Are you committed to living a fuller, more harmonious life? Do you want to contribute to positive changes in our world? Then keep listening as your host, Reverend Crystal, explores how you can deepen your life and aid in changing the world.
Wake up, awaken.
And welcome to You Wake Up. This is Reverend Crystal Muldrow. As the person said, I am so excited about this show because we have a very, very special guest who is going to end this month of living your dreams with us. That is the theme for this month. This has been the theme. And how apropos that we have our guest, but a little bit about the theme. Now, we all, I believe, every single one of us at some point in time feel like we cannot live our dream, but that is our goal, is to live the goals and live the dreams that manifest, that make us happy, to bring bliss into our lives. And so, but how do we get to that bliss? How do we get to that happiness when the world seems to be in turmoil, when at points in times it seems like our life is in turmoil? How do we get to that point? Well, our special guest, Swami Kriyananda, has many of the answers. So for those of you who are not familiar with Swami Kriyananda, let me give you a little bit of background about him. Now, Swami Kriyananda is a prolific and internationally regarded author, and prolific in that he has written over 140 books that have been translated in 28 languages, so 3.5 million copies. Not only is he an author, he's a speaker, accomplished composer. Since 1964, having written 400 musical works. My goodness. He's a playwright, an artist, a world-renowned spiritual leader. Swami Kriyananda refers to himself simply as a humble disciple of the great spiritual leader, Paramahansa Yogananda. And so without further ado, and without getting jumbled up, let us introduce you to Swami Kriyananda. Thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you very much, and I too feel very honored to be on it.
Well, bless you. Well, the first segment, we like to just kind of get to know you, so I am curious, as you are one of the last, you are the last teaching direct disciple from Paramahansa Yogananda. How did you meet Paramahansa Yogananda?
I met him back in 1948. I was 22. I'm pushing 85.
Wow.
Yeah. I read Autobiography of a Yogi, which is his classic work, and it absolutely changed my life. I took the next bus across the country from New York to Los Angeles. And the first words I addressed to him were words I never believed I'd ever say to anybody. I said, "I want to be your disciple."
Wow.
I've been that ever since.
Just like that, from reading Autobiography of Yogi and meeting.
Well, I have to say there were years before that prepared me for it. I had not believed in God. I had not disbelieved. I just didn't know. The God that I was told about in my church did not appeal to me. I thought my search was for truth, and I sought it in many different avenues, and finally I realized that every one of these avenues of seeking truth without some sort of God was not possible. And so I remember a long walk I took outside Charleston, South Carolina, where I was living at the time, and I asked myself, if there's a God, what must he be? Well, he can't be a judge or a policeman or some human form of any kind.
Yeah.
And I realized that he had to be consciousness. That's the one certainty that I had, that I was conscious. And he had to be consciousness. And my goal in life then must be to open myself to that consciousness, so that I could be more conscious. And I resolved then and there that I would seek God and I would devote my life to seeking Him. And this search for God led me, I didn't know anything about Indian philosophy, but it led me to a little book on my mother's bookshelf, which is called A Short World Bible. And the little excerpts that I read from the Hindu religion very much attracted me because they were non-personal and scientific. Mm. I was very pleased with this. But I still didn't know anything. And I knew enough, though, when I saw this book on a shelf in a New York bookstore, Autobiography of a Yogi, and I saw that picture on the cover. It was so attractive, so magnetic, that I decided this is what I must do. And I read the book, and everything, he was a vegetarian, all right, I would be a vegetarian. He was a monk, all right, I would be a monk.
Wow.
It was that sudden. But I tell you, I was more than ripe. I had reached the point of being desperate to find this truth.
Well, so how was your first, so you said you got on the train and you rushed to...
A bus.
You got on a bus.
A bus, Greyhound bus.
All right. And
they didn't have money for a train.
Just any way to get the truth, it doesn't matter how you get there, you're just going to get there.
Absolutely.
And so what was your first meeting like when you first...
More than anything else was his absolute integrity.
Hmm. I've heard reports from many people have read things that just to meet him, it felt like he was absolute love, unconditional love.
He was that. He was bliss. He was humble. He had a great sense of humor. In that sense, he was very human, and yet there was no ego there. I could spend days talking about what amazed me about him, but basically, I think that he just showed the bliss and the love that I was looking for.
Yes, yes. And so then you went to him and said you wanted to be a disciple. What was your training like after that then?
After that, well, he accepted me, which again was unusual. He accepted me right away.
Wow.
And the training was actually, I became a very close disciple very quickly. I think he sort of knew I was coming or something because... He took me out to the desert, and he had a retreat there, and he gave dictation. He had me listening to this. He was training me to be a writer and a lecturer, and he had me, he put me in charge of the monks there, gave me many responsibilities. He didn't talk about community, strangely enough, because that's the main thing I've done for him. He was very keen on starting World Brotherhood Colonies, as he called them. And yet he didn't tell me to do that, and I'm the only one who has done it. But I think that he didn't tell me because he knew that I would have to do that apart from the organization that he built. And he didn't want me to know prematurely that my destiny would be on the outside.
Wow. And I read someplace that fairly soon, because you were with him, what, maybe 3 years and training before he died?
3.5 years.
3.5 years. And in 3.5 years, he appointed you head.
Well, actually, he appointed me the head after 1 year, and I couldn't take it seriously. After the second year, he made it more serious. And I developed rules for the monks. And classes for the monks, and I said that I know that it's the custom for the head of a religious organization to demand obedience. I do not demand obedience of you. All I ask is that you cooperate with my what I ask, but not cooperate only if you feel to. I will not impose my will on you. And I think that was an unusual thing.
Because most gurus would impose it.
Well, I didn't.
All right. Wow, how beautiful. How beautiful. And so, and to be, and I guess in Christian terms, to be at the feet of the master, the guru, I mean, how remarkable and so quickly. And it just sounds like your relationship blossomed in a blink of an eye.
Yes, it did. And you say, to put it in Christian terms, I remember literally sitting at his feet when he was editing his Bhagavad Gita commentaries. And I was thinking how fortunate and wonderful it was to be his disciple. And when he finished, he had me help him get to his feet, and he looked at me in the eyes, and he said, just the bulge of the ocean. He never accepted anything for himself. He was just a little wave on the great ocean of God.
And then it sounds like you've just completed that by being the humble servant.
Well, I've tried. I've certainly tried. That I can say.
Well, and you've succeeded. I mean, you just said that I believe the community you were talking about was Ananda, L.A., part of a community of the Brotherhood.
We have now 8 communities in the world, including Italy and India, and we're trying to get a community started here in Los Angeles. That'll make the 9th.
And even though you said he didn't talk much about community, it seems like what was this community of the Brotherhood what was that all about that he wanted to see manifest in the world?
A group of people who believe the same thing, their beliefs become stronger if they're able to mix with like-minded people. We have about 1,000 people living in all our communities, and actually it's a fantastic thing to find that many people living together in harmony and peace and cooperation, helping each other in need, etc. It's really thrilling.
Well, it seems like that is what we all want, is to live in peace and bliss.
I offer this way of life as a serious offering for hard times economically, which we're in already, but it's going to get much, much worse. And I think that if people could buy land out in the country, live together, build their own food, grow their own food, build their own homes, they would be, this model that I've created, I think will become a worldwide thing. Yogananda said this idea would spread like wildfire.
Just if we could just know the truth, the simple truth.
Yeah.
Amen. And remarkably enough, you are also teaching, starting tomorrow is pushed back, you're teaching a workshop at Ananda, which is also the name of our show, Accessing Bliss.
Yes. Yeah, and the subjects of this course are, first of all, the importance of right attitude and right action, that without those, you're bound to fail eventually. I think that this depression we're coming into is based on the fact that too many people are avaricious. So I'm going to teach the importance of honesty, truthfulness, integrity, kindness, non-attachment, contentment, non-competitiveness, concentration, willpower, magnetism, inspiration, creativity. All of those will be covered in this course.
And all of these things will get us to a happiness or a bliss. Is there a difference between happiness and bliss in your...
What is the difference?
Is there a difference?
Well, there is a difference, yes. Happiness is what everybody wants. What they really want is bliss, because God is bliss, and they are manifestations of God. But happiness is sort of a masquerade for bliss, and it's a nice thing. The only thing is that happiness has its opposite. Unhappiness. And where you have one, you have the opposite. You have to go beyond happiness. There's no reason for bliss. You may have a reason for happiness. I have a nice home, I have nice children and wife, I have a nice job, etc. For bliss, there's no reason. It's just self-existent.
It also sounds like a non-detachment. The happiness is there's an attachment to things, to relationships, to getting something to make us happy, but the bliss...
Well, I think you're absolutely right.
So the bliss is just a being, a non-attachment to the thing,
yeah.
Not expecting, but just living in that love.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it sounds like then, I'm curious, what is, did Yogananda send you on a specific, well, you said it, he sent you on a specific mission, he made you the person who was head of his world of his foundations and things like that, but was like there a specific thing, like were you on the mission to just carry out the teaching, meditation and yoga, or was there just, did he say something to you?
I have been teaching yoga for the past 62 years, so certainly that's important to me.
It would be the Kriya Yoga then.
Yeah, and meditation, but all the attitudes and everything that that's associated with, which I'm going to be teaching here. And, you know, when you hear a word like yoga, you think it's something foreign and exotic. But basically, it takes into account certain universally understood principles. For example, that if you want to be happy, you have to raise your energy. We even have words in our common language, probably in all languages, that if you feel uplifted, you're happy. If you feel downcast, you're unhappy. If you feel high, you're great. If you feel low, you're not great. And then the heart is, in fact, the center of feeling and feeling awareness. A young swain who's disappointed in love, he'll say, "I'm heartbroken." He won't say, "I'm knee broken." It's the heart that has our feelings. If we direct those feelings up toward the brain, then we can transform them into bliss. There are other little simple things that are everybody can recognize. For example, the ego is centered in the medulla oblongata. Mm-hmm. You'll notice that when people are proud, they tend to, as they say, look down their noses at people. That's because their energy is centered there. The universal gesture throughout the world for humility is a bow, releasing the tension at the back of the head and offering it forward. Now, if you can take the energy in the medulla oblongata and focus it forward to its positive center, which is between the two eyebrows, then you can attain super consciousness. So there are many, many aspects of yoga that tie in together with what people know already but don't know what to do with.
And it sounds like they'll be learning more about that at your workshops. And speaking of that, we'll be talking more about the workshop and be speaking with Swami Kriyananda right after these messages here on You Wake Up.
Wake up, wake up, awaken.
We now return to You Wake Up with host Crystal Muldrow.
And welcome back to a profound show with revered spiritual leader Swami Kriyananda, who is the direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda. And we were just talking about, before we left on the other end of the show, we were talking about how Swami Kriyananda teaches meditation and teaches yoga and has been doing this for 60 years now, direct disciple and from the direct lessons of Paramahansa Yogananda. So in many ways, when you go to Swami Kriyananda, it's almost like you are with the teacher himself, the guru, Paramahansa Yogananda. Welcome back to the show, and thank you again, Swami Kriyananda, for being on the show. And before we left, you were talking about meditation and yoga and how we want various things, but we just don't know what to do with it. And it sounds like if we go to your workshop, that we will learn how to access bliss.
Well, that will be touched on, but it won't be the main subject of the talk, because I try to reach people where they are. And the purpose of this talk primarily is to help them to understand how to survive in hard times.
And so the workshop we're referring to is 6 weeks to lasting success and happiness. Yeah. And if you can't be in LA, you can also go online so that you can access Swami Kriyananda that way. And it's beautiful because it one of the things it says is that you can discover a practical pathway to personal liberation and joy.
Absolutely. Finally, we have to understand it's between us and truth. We stand alone before that truth.
And the truth, as you teach it, is?
God.
And the oneness of God.
Yes. And this God is not a person. He's actually your own self. That is to say, you are a wave on his ocean of consciousness. And your duty in life is to merge back into that bliss. What keeps you from merging into it is desires, attachment, things that make you think this world is everything you want, and yet this world gives you many disappointments. And when you finally wake up and realize that the goal of life is to go beyond this into a higher consciousness, then you find that the only people in the world who have what they were looking for are the saints. No one else. Money, that doesn't give it to you. Howard Hughes, he was the wealthiest man in the world. A week before he died, he told a reporter on the phone who said, "Are you happy?" He said, "Nah, I'm not happy." Mm. His scary tone of voice says for him, nobody really has happiness, perfect happiness, who doesn't have something of God. But God is not a being. I remember there was an atheist in Australia who once said to me, "I'm an atheist. What can you tell me about God that will impress me?" I paused a second. I said, "Why don't you think of God as the highest potential you can imagine for yourself?" And he was sort of shocked by that, and he said, "Well, I can live with that." And that's so. We all have that potential.
We all are that potential. How beautiful.
And we are that potential, exactly.
Wow. And I think the thing that is so hard for us, even in unity, or we're indoctrinated with images and the thought that the God is this thing, this person, this authority figure that we have to pleasure. And that seems to be what keeps us in bondage as well, trying to please something that is not a thing.
Exactly. He's pleased with our happiness. That's all that pleases him. Our true happiness.
Well,
and
I think it's hard for most people to digest that because we're taught that we're lowly sinners so many times, that we are actually of the pure. We are that drop in the ocean of purity, of love, of greatness, which is God.
That's why I couldn't accept God before. I just couldn't accept that I'm a sinner.
I'm with you.
Yes, I made mistakes, but I won't identify myself with those mistakes. You know, I remember many, many years ago, I was 21, and I decided to give up smoking. Well, it was the most difficult thing. It was sort of like Mark Twain who said, "Oh, smoking's the easiest thing in the world to give up. I've done it 1,000 times." Every time I'd get a yen for a smoke, I would have a smoke. And but the thing is, and I stumbled on a very important truth with this, I never said I had failed. Mm. I always told myself, I have not yet succeeded. Why identify yourself with sin? Yogananda said, a saint is a sinner who never gave up.
A saint is a sinner who never gave up.
Yeah. So no matter how many times you fail, don't call yourself a failure. He said the greatest sin is to call yourself a sinner.
Well, it sounds like the connection, too, is since we're all that drop of God, then if we call ourselves a sinner, then we inevitably then are calling that which is magnificent a sinner, which is an impossibility.
Exactly.
Wow. But I also love how you use, you don't use words in a negative way. You look to the positive.
Why not?
But so many of us get trapped in that, using it in the negative.
Well, if you think that you can't do it, you won't be able to.
Well, there you go.
Think you've failed, you're a failure.
Being careful with your words.
Anything that you want in life, if you tell yourself you can do it. You know, in college, it's a long story. Are you ready for a slightly long story?
I think we have time, sir.
It's worth it.
Yes.
I was in college and I took Greek. Well, I didn't see any point in Greek and I didn't see any point in college, and I ended up leaving college. But as the end of the year came by and the professor began coaching us for the exam, he said, well, of course, there are some people who might as well not appear for this exam, and everybody in the class looked at me and laughed. Well, I determined I would pass. At that time, I knew perhaps words like and other very basic, important words. No, I did not know Greek. And I told myself a week beforehand, all right, I'm going to study and make up for my deficiency. I couldn't stand studying. It just was so uninteresting.
Yes.
Right before the exam, I thought, my God, tomorrow I've got this exam. I had no intention of flunking it, but I couldn't imagine anybody in his right mind endorsing these roseate expectations. But they say that necessity is the mother of invention. Mm-hmm. Necessity helped me then. I told myself, you're a Greek. All of a sudden, I felt that I was in tune with Greek. It didn't seem foreign to me. And I studied it for 2 hours, great intensity, full concentration. But it was a very difficult exam. There were only two people in the class who passed it. I was one of them.
Wow. Wow. So by your pure intention and you're turning around your consciousness to say, I am Greek.
Well, this is very important. Tell yourself you are a saint and you can be a saint.
Say to yourself that you are the truth and that you are the living God.
Yes.
And then you will become that.
Yes, I didn't want to go that far because I didn't know whether your listeners would be ready to take that step, but we are God.
Yeah.
In the sense that you can't say the wave is the ocean, but you can say the ocean is all of its waves.
Amen. Amen. And going back to the attachment, so we can't embrace that unless we let go.
Well, right. If you're clinging to one thing, how can you hang on to something else?
Especially when you're a wave that can just move around.
And one of my classes is going to be on non-attachment.
Yes. Well, but how do you achieve that non-attachment? I mean, especially here in the West, we're indoctrinated by commercials that tell us that we have to be attached, that we have to do great things, we have to get great things, we have to be bigger, better, we have to look right. How do we do that?
We have to use our discrimination. Society tells us many wrong things. Every value that we are offered, I really think we should stand back and look at it and see, is this right or is it not right? Society tells us many things that are wrong, and this certainly is one of them. I remember I transferred from Haverford to Brown University, and I had to have a psychiatric exam. Everybody did who came in, and he liked me, and he asked me, do you like reading? And I said, yes. He said, do you have much of a library? I said, I have about 300 books, and they're all classics and so on. He said, are you very fond of this library? I said, yes. He said, now let me ask you a question. What if somebody came in and stole them all away from you? How would you feel? I said, I wouldn't mind at all. And he said, that's the first thing you've said that it disappointed me. Hmm. To him, it meant lack of interest. It didn't mean that to me at all. Non-attachment is not lack of interest. And I think he was wrong, even though he thinks I was wrong. And I'm willing to tell this story because I think it's that value that society offers us is a false value. I am not those books. I'm the same human being. One time I went skiing up in toward Lake Tahoe, and I totaled my car. When I reached the icy level, I put my foot on the brake too quickly, rammed into a Greyhound bus, didn't even scratch the car of the bus, but totaled my car. So I got on the bus to go skiing. And a lady in the bus said, "What a pity you've totaled your car." And I knew I'd totaled it, but I hadn't stopped to think that it was a pity. And when she said that, I said to her, "You know, a week from now I'd feel all right. Why waste a week? I could feel fine now."
Yes.
I'm not that car.
And that's the attachment.
Yeah.
That you didn't care, but that car is not you.
But any time you grieve over losing something, you know that sooner or later you'll overcome that grief. Why not overcome it right away? Why is it there brooding and weeping until finally you've understood that you should have given up that brooding and grieving long ago?
But also seems like since we're all part of that one ocean, why grieve over something that you haven't lost anyway?
Well, you need that. If you need that philosophy, absolutely. You haven't lost it in that sense because you're a part of everything. But indeed, tell yourself, do I depend on that car? Do I depend on those jewels that were stolen? You don't. You didn't. You were happy before you had them. Why not be happy after you've lost them? It doesn't matter.
Well, no, it doesn't. And what came will come again, if that is what the will is to be.
Exactly.
And so non-attachment, and that's one of the classes that you're going to be teaching. And why do you feel that it's imperative for you to personally teach these classes at this time?
Well, it means, after all, I'm 86, 85. Not so easy to be giving classes at my age. I must admit, my heart gets very tired sometimes. At the same time, I'm so keen to share the truths that have really given me something I consider worthwhile, which is to say an undying happiness. And I'm eager to teach them, just for that reason.
And it sounds like that's what you want your students to get, basically to be happy, to be in bliss.
Yes, absolutely. But you know, I'm trying to help students who aren't going to begin even in this life to think about bliss, because all of them can learn to be honest, can learn to be truthful, can learn to have that kind of integrity which will make it possible for them to survive, if not happily, at least contentedly, this great time of depression, which I feel very certain is on its way.
So from that, it sounds like it's time for us then, if we can't really reach bliss now, to just start knocking off some of the levels of programming that we've digested.
Well, if people are ready to find bliss, great. If I've understood your question, Crystal, I'm not sure, as you know, I'm a little hard of hearing. But the point is that to the extent that you feel freedom in yourself, to that extent, everything you need will be given to you.
Amen. Amen. Well, when we come back, we will talk more about that with Swami Kriyananda, along with not only his workshop, but some other ventures that he will be doing. And so in the last segment, we'll continue our conversation with Swami Kriyananda. If you'd like to ask questions, you can call in at 1-55-888-UNITY or hit the You Wake Up Facebook fan page, and you can ask a question that way after these messages. And welcome back to a wonderful, wonderful blessing for this show. We have been talking to Swami Kriyananda. We've had an hour of just wisdom and profound information coming from Swami Kriyananda, and we still have more to go. So thus far, we have been talking about your workshop, which starts tomorrow. It's called The 6 Weeks to Lasting Success and Happiness. And mostly we've been talking about the not wanting attachment, because attachment might bring you some happiness, but it will not bring you bliss. But there were some other things that you're teaching. What were those things, again, that you'll be teaching in there? In your
honesty, truthfulness, integrity, kindness is a very important thing. You know, at our community, we have two principles that have made us successful. One is that people are more important than things.
Yes.
And the other is that where there is right action, there is victory. So, non-attachment, contentment. Contentment is something that you must practice. It doesn't just come passively. Non-competitiveness, concentration and willpower, magnetism, inspiration, and, as you've mentioned, creativity.
And all these things will be taught as a form of being able to, it sounds like, get out of some of the programming that we're having, coming to our true nature.
Yeah.
Well, how beautiful. Now, beyond the 6 weeks, you are also being honored as being one of the keynote speakers at the Consciousness Life Expo. What is your topic going to be for that?
How to attain bliss.
Ah. So in many ways, especially at this point in time, bliss is your theme. Attaining bliss, helping people to attain bliss is truly the goal.
You don't attain bliss. You remove the obstacles to it and discover that your nature is bliss.
Remove the so the obstacles would be the attachment components and the not living the truth of ourselves.
Things, desires, attachment, restlessness, you name it.
Again, we've been so patterned to desire things. How do we get out of that? How do we just begin to not want to desire, not hold on to something that feels so good?
Well, I've offered in this course, I will be offering, an exercise mentally to build a fire and cast into that fire every desire and attachment and watch it burn up and watch it joyfully as you see it burn away. It's just a mental exercise, but I have found in my life that it is very effective.
So whether it's good or bad, you toss it in there.
Yes.
And so good or bad, that's relative. It's just
right. But each time you burn up something, you feel freer. I don't need that. I don't need this. I'm not needing a car. I don't need that. It doesn't mean that these things, that you should shove them out of your life. It means you don't have attachment to them.
Yeah, but what about personal relationships, like finding the right person to love and things like that? Even those attachments?
Yes, because you find that love, which is attached, is selfish. If you're loving another person for who he is or who she is, this is self-giving. That is true love. The other is desire. Mm-hmm. And the Spanish have it perfectly. They don't say, I love you. They say, I want you. Te quiero. And that's how most people think of it. But if you can learn really to think in terms of what can I do for this person, I love him or her so much, I want to help him, this is love. The other is desire.
So not the selfish love of what can I get from this person, how this person makes me feel, but the selfless, what I can do.
Yeah.
Wow. And so obviously that also sounds like the agape love, not necessarily a passionate love, intimate love, but it sounds like we not only should be doing that for the people that we care about, but throughout the world.
Yes, and the other love is grasping and in the end disappointing.
Yeah, true that. I think that's why there's so many love songs that are heartbreaking.
Yeah, all love songs virtually are sad. I loved you. You've done me wrong.
I wish you would love me. You've done me wrong because you don't love me.
Yeah. It sounds good in Italian. Oh, cessate di piagarmi, oh, lasciatemi morire. Sounds great in Italian, but all it means is stop bugging me and let me die.
Wow. Stop bugging me, but that's an interesting point, too. Stop bugging me and let me die. It sounds like let me die in consciousness, not necessarily just the physical world.
Well, not quite the meaning.
Ah.
Wishes.
So just let me die in the physical because I'm so sad?
What is that?
So that's more like let me die in the physical because I'm just so sad.
I didn't get that.
Well, in the Greek that, or no, you didn't say Greek, you said Italian.
Yeah.
The Italian of that was leave me alone and let me die.
Oh, cessate di piagarmi, stop bugging me and let me die. Oh, lasciatemi morire. Is let me die. And it sounds great as long as you don't know what it means.
There you go.
But every love song virtually is either that kind of song or another song which you can understand without my translating it. Vittoria, vittoria, mio cuore. Victory, my heart. So, because I finally got her. But then what is she going to do? Yogananda used to say that, yes, men are stronger than women, but a woman with a 6-inch tongue can kill a man 6 feet tall. Mm.
Well, and then once you have that relationship, you're always in the struggle of keeping it.
What is that?
Once you're in that relationship, you seem to always be in the struggle of keeping it.
Yeah.
So, wow. So again, the attainment of bliss is the letting go.
This is the goal of all life.
Because bliss is life.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you say bliss is life, could that also be construed as bliss is that creative, the God or whatever you want to call God?
Well, you know, I feel bliss most of the time. And what it gives me is a feeling of complete contentment in whatever happens.
Hmm. Again, that non-attachment.
Yeah.
Well, how beautiful! How beautiful! So, your keynote speech is the goal of life is bliss, and then you're also having another wonderful. We already said in your bio that you are an author, but you're also a playwright, and you are in the process of writing a screenplay. Could you tell us?
Well, that was my first ambition in life, was to be a playwright. And it was only when I realized I didn't know the truth that I thought, why should I flood the world with my ignorance? And I quit it. But now I've gotten back into movie script writing, and I've written several scripts. It's rather fun. And this one is called Yogananda, and we have a director for it, and we have several people involved in promoting it and so on. So I think that we will make a movie of it. We're hot on the trail anyway.
And so is this a documentary or is this more of a...
It's a regular movie. It has me in it, sort of reminiscing. But more than that, it tells stories about it from his childhood up to his death. And many stories many people don't know. There's one I'll just tell you.
Please.
It's a beautiful story. He was in Encinitas, where he had a community, and they have a carrot juice processing plant there because they grow carrots. So he wanted to share, I would say, with maybe 10 people, this carrot juice, and the monk whom he had asked to go get it had to come back and say that it's all exhausted. We only have enough for about a third of a glass. So Yogananda just casually said, we'll bring that. And they poured from that glass out into 10 glasses, and it remained, each glass was full, and the original remained at the third.
Wow. Well, for I think most of us, a lot of us, that kind of sounded like the fishes and the loaves story of Jesus. How beautiful.
Yeah, It sounds like the miracles of Jesus.
Well, we definitely heard that Paramahansa Yogananda was quite a, not only a guru, but just manifested beautiful things. That's amazing.
I lived in enough to see those.
You saw that one?
What is that?
You saw that particular...
Not that one, others.
Can you give us another story?
I'll tell you this one. It was rather fun. I was working with another monk on plastering a building, and the plaster was old, and it was setting up, and it was very hard to get it to keep it soft. I had to keep applying water into it to keep it soft, and it was. I had just poured a new hot of mud, you call it, onto the board when his car drove up, and he called to us. And he talked to us for about a half an hour. Of course, we were thrilled to be with him. In the back of my mind, there was a thought that we'd go back to a solid brick. I didn't know what we'd do. I was much more interested in being with him than worrying about this, but I didn't see any alternative. When I got back, the mud was so soft, the pasta was so soft, and it remained soft for the rest of the day. He never said anything, as he didn't say anything about the carriages. But somehow around him, things kept happening. An astonishing thing that happened once was I had said something at a gathering of people, which he thought I should have done differently. And he told me so, and I said, "You knew?" He said, "I know every thought you think." Mm. Astounding statement.
It is. Wow. And just to be that open and receptive. I mean, it's oh my goodness. And since he's so I would assume since he's so non-detached to anything, just open to spirit, just his consciousness could accept anything.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was always, he was our friend.
Wow. Well, Swami Kriyananda, if we were interested in either attending your workshop or logging on, how would we do that?
Well, they can write to www.anandala.org.
And that is your community of brotherhood, is the Ananda LA.
Yes, that's the one down in Los Angeles. They can look up ananda.org and they can get our community in Nevada City, where our main community is. It's been there for 43 years now, nearly. And we have communities in Italy. If you just look up ananda.org, it'll tell you everything.
And
worldwide.
And really, the workshop is just the newest thing, but there are a number of classes and opportunities happening all the time at Ananda, L.A.
Yeah.
And then if you want to hear more about the 9th Consciousness Life Expo, you can also go to the website. I believe it's www.consciousnesslifeexpo.com. That's www.consciousnesslifeexpo.com. And if we want to get any more information about your movie, is there a website for that?
I'm asking my secretary. He says no, not yet.
Okay.
You can write it under the LA, and you'll hear what we can give.
Beautiful, beautiful. And for those Facebook people, there are two spots that you can like on Facebook. It's Ananda LA. Just look it up. And you can like that. And also, Swami Kriyananda has his page as well. So Kriyananda is spelled Kriyananda, if you want to find out more about Swami Kriyananda. And I just want to thank you so very much for being on You Wake Up. We truly appreciate you. And for all of our listeners, if you'd like to donate, you are welcome to go to unity.fm. And so that we can have more people like this on our line, just hit that donate button and contribute beautifully.